Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Hope you're staying dry out there. Drive safely today, please, if you have to drive anywhere. I just got a text from Amy, Seth, that school is canceled in Deer Park.
Deer Park,
so Friendswood. She gets a snow day, yeah.
Friendswood, I don't know about all the friends. All I know is that the Friendswood area has some school closures.
The Friendswood area is basically like, you know, sometimes when you have, the drain is backed up on something in your house, your sink or your bathtub, and all the water collects in one area. That's Friendswood is basically the drain of Houston. And there's a bunch of hair underneath the city.
Oh, it's the little curvy part at the bottom.
Yeah.
It's the catch.
I just know that it's always on the news when it rains. It doesn't go well in Friendswood.
Right where before everything always eventually empties out.
That's right.
It's a tropical depression, which is a bit of a onomatopoeia there, is it? No, what's the word? Oxymoron.
Oxymoron,
it's tropical, you usually
paradox.
Think happy.
Yeah.
Depression, now I don't think of tropical. Very rare do you think of like, oh yeah, tropical location where everybody's depressed.
Yeah.
They're usually
it's an ironic name.
Bobby McFerrin type stuff. Don't worry, be happy.
It's an ironic name, yeah. If it were onomatopoeia, it would be whatever sound that the rain makes when it hits the ground.
It's a pleasant sound right now.
It
I woke
is.
Up this morning expecting, honestly, like everybody in Houston right now, whenever you hear about any kind of rain event, you wake up expecting Harvey.
Yeah.
And you wait, you can't sleep at night because I hear rain on the roof all night long. Even though it's a gentle rain, you get that Harvey PTSD. I woke up seven times. I got excited. I'm going to go to bed early last night. I'm going to get a solid 7 hours of sleep. I'm going to wake up, be one of the most well-rested people ever. So I went to the bathroom like three times. I was just kind of agitated. My legs were all fidgety. I hadn't had a bunch of caffeine or anything. But I'm thinking, don't look at the clock. Don't look at the clock. It's fine. It's probably like 3 a.m, but don't look at the clock. So this third or fourth time I get up to the bathroom, I'm like, all right, I'm going to look at the clock. 10:18 p.m.
You'd gotten up to take a leak three times? It wasn't even midnight yet?
I don't know what the hell was going on.
What did you drink?
It was nothing. It was a tropical depression blues. That's what it was. I'm just
when there's water falling out of the sky, my bladder starts producing water.
It's this constant just having dreams about roof leaks, all this stuff. I go, I think I might need counseling.
Yeah, but seriously,
I spent so much time in my attic during Harvey because I had a few leaks that I hit my head on roofing nails, like all these things that now whenever I get back to any kind of a rain event, I can't sleep.
It's kind of good, though, when you look at the clock and it says 10:18 p.m., right? You're like, oh, I still got like 5 hours of sleep I get to get in.
I know, because I figured I had like 19 more interruptions.
Urinations?
Yeah. I was like a dog with a bladder issue. I'd get up, I'd pee for 3 seconds, and I'd go back to bed.
I kind of like that feeling. I think 1:55 was when I spontaneously woke up in the middle of the night last night. I'm like, that's still 2 hours. What do you set your alarm for?
4 a.m.
I probably should have asked you this before I started doing a morning show. 4 a.m. you said it for? Yeah. Jonesy, what do you say, 4 a.m.? Yeah, I go 3:55 because then I feel like I can get I can hit snooze one time and not feel guilty about it. I don't get nervous. If the first number is a 3 handle, then I don't get nervous hitting snooze. I'm like, it's still 3 something.
Right, right. You feel like you're really, you're getting that early bird worm.
Yeah.
I used to have to have the last number be a prime number. Actually, the whole minutes needed to be a prime number.
That was Ivy League of you.
No. It was something I started doing in seventh grade, and I just broke myself of it a year ago.
It sounds like something A-Rod would do. You want to have an even numbered lead because a 2-run lead doesn't get you beat by a solo home run, and a 4-run lead, a grand slam only ties the game. A-Rod said that a couple of weeks ago, kids. Just know that if you are watching A-Rod's analysis on TV, that's what you're getting. And I hate it because I stuck up for that guy. But at any rate, did you watch the Astros at all last night?
I did. Well, I did until I went to bed early because I went to bed at 8:30 or so.
Yeah.
And then I caught up this morning, obviously.
Did you miss the back-to-back jacks of Bregman and Yordan Alvarez?
Yes, I missed a lot of it.
There were some nice jacks. Yordan Alvarez hit one into Torchy's Tacos out in center field. And the
there's 400. His it's you heard Bregman's, and Bregman's was 300 some feet, and you think, oh, that's nice, Bregman. And then you heard Jordan, and it's always 400 and a gazillion feet.
Yeah,
it was
Jordan's a real story. He's a real story topper, that guy.
It is. Like, hey, look at that! I had a 405 foot home run, and like, hold my cerveza.
See that guy in the upper deck above Torchy's Tacos? Watch me hit him.
I'm about to blow the back out of this joint.
I'm gonna get another orange chair out in center field, dedicated to me, Jordan Alvarez.
I'm doing the baseball equivalent of poking the cervix. Okay, dump that, Jonesy. Dump that. Dump that.
We gotta dump that. Five
Did you dump it successfully, Jonesy?
Yeah, good job. Right. Yeah, see the lights.
That's too many
right
cervix
there.
References. That's this early in the morning.
I don't know. I feel like there's a sweet spot where you don't do that, and we're ahead of it right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
thanks for dumping that, Jonesy.
The kids aren't even up yet, let alone in school. So, the big talk now, anytime Bregman does something, now for the end of the year, will be, is Mike Trout being injured, is that going to be enough to get Alex Bregman an American League MVP award? Because it feels like it's down to those two guys. It feels like it's down to Trout, who's now injured, is the leader in the clubhouse, but he's not going to play anymore, and Alex Bregman, who is knocking on the doorstep of 40 home runs,
I think,
which is amazing for a wee little fella like he is.
They need to start doing it like they do in other sports, damn it, which is Trout's so good that there's a ridiculously high standard for if he should get MVP.
Right.
Just like with LeBron, for however many years where LeBron really realistically was the MVP of the league, but it gets boring to keep giving it to him.
Yeah.
I would say likewise with baseball, they need to start doing that.
All right, Trout.
Only if you have a year above and beyond what your normal supremacy is should you get the AL MVP.
Here's the thing, Seth, he hasn't won it since 2016. People forget that. I was looking last night at Trout's numbers. I was how many games is he going to wind up playing this year? It's 134 games. He's done for the season. And I looked and I'm like, well, he hasn't won one since 2016. He's been in the league since 2011. He's won two. So it's not like this is something where he's won five in a row or something like
that. He's banged up in 2017, wasn't he?
He was. That was the year he played 114 games. That was the year Altuve won it.
Yep.
Was in 2017. Last year, I think it was Mookie Betts who won it last year, and Trout was runner-up.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, he's got a hell of a body of work. I mean, he leads the major leagues in on-base slugging, on-base plus slugging, and he's got 45 home runs. So
it's strange. The last 3 years, too, in a lot of ways, have been the best of his career, other than just not being healthy in 2017.
Yeah.
He's had an OPS over one for the last three seasons in a row. It's just absurd how consistent he is.
He's really, really good.
So, but it could be now Bregman and him neck and neck. And Bregman, you can extrapolate. If it was basketball, you'd go on a per-game basis, and Trout would look a lot better in a few different areas. But because it's not basketball and because it's baseball, you look at the total numbers.
Yeah.
And because Bregman's been healthier, he's compiled more stats in a bunch of areas. And health matters, damn it.
Yeah, health matters, and he's on a team that's going to wind up, in all likelihood, with the best record in baseball as well.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be something that gets sprinkled into the mix. So we'll see what happens with that.
Plus, here's the other thing. Trout, he's the richest kid, and you should always want to stick it to the richest kid.
He's literally the richest kid.
Yeah, he's already the richest kid. You can't just keep giving the rich kid the awards at school.
Bregman's only making $16 million a year for the next 6 years.
He's a relative pauper.
Right, because he signed a long-term deal that bought out his arbitration years.
Yeah.
It's not like Trout who just signed a $40 million a year deal.
That is important.
How does Bregman get by on that?
He got that extension, but it was more than anything. The Astros might not end up paying much different than they would have anyway. Because of all the arbitration years that Bregman would have gotten paid big time in arbitration.
They would have. The main thing they get out of it is they actually bought out his first 2 years of what would have been post-free agency as well. So the main thing is they're getting to keep him around for 6 years through his prime. So that's baseball. Shifting gears, the Texans swapped out their punters yesterday. I feel like there's a clause in Bill O'Brien's contract now that he is both Billy O, the coach, and William O'Brien, Esquire, general manager, that he's contractually obligated to cut at least one player each week.
We're going to shuffle stuff around as much as we can.
Last week it was Aaron Colvin.
Yep.
This week he swaps out Trevor Daniel for Brian Anger. Did you think that Trevor Daniel deserved to be cut? I hadn't really... He was inconsistent for sure the first couple weeks.
I think
weeks.
The inconsistency, and you pair it with some of the odd punts here and there from last year, I would say that Brad Seeley knows what he's doing. And I think Brad Seeley, did you get the impression that Brad Seeley, the special teams coordinator, has a lot of, I don't want to say authority, but...
Stroke.
Yeah, O'Brien.
Yes.
Brad Seeley is the first guy to bring respectable special teams to the Texans in damn near... Ever? Almost a decade.
Yeah.
No, they had respectable special teams under Joe Marciano for a while. It's just... Until they didn't, right. Yeah. So it's been a decade since they really had respectable special teams.
Yeah. So they swap out punt. Brian Anger is back. They brought in Marquette King to work him out. That would have been more fun.
For the second time.
Yeah.
So Marquette King, remember, is a player who's despised by many of his teammates, both in Oakland and... Had incidents in Denver.
He was in Denver for like a cup of coffee.
He's the exact opposite. He's almost like a Jalen Ramsey of the punting world, except you're not allowed to be a Jalen Ramsey if you're a punter.
At all.
Because you don't want to be a distraction. Jalen Ramsey gets away with stuff because, for one, he's a really, really good corner. And two, the position he's good at is one that people actually care about.
Yeah, it's a premium position.
You can't be the loud, obnoxious punter. It's weird that the Texans, who seem to value culture above all else, keep bringing Marquette King in for workouts.
I feel like we'll ask McClain about this when he comes in. This is my prediction on what McClain's answer is going to be. Nope, that's somebody Brad Seeley knows from when he was at Oakland. He's just doing him a favor, getting him some buzz, getting his name out there. That's what John said the first time they came in and they brought him in for a workout. Was they're just doing him a solid to remind everybody that, hey, Marquette King still exists.
Yeah.
I'm still out here.
I don't have an issue at all. This is different than a place kicker. Place kickers, I always worry about messing with their brains. And then also, when a kicker comes in, you have to worry about the timing with the holder and the snapper and all that stuff. With a punter, it's a damn punter. There's little nuances from place to place, but you catch the snap, you punt the ball,
right.
You do what they ask you to. We've been clamoring for accountability for so many years that I'm not going to sit here and wring my hands or rub my hands. What's the word I'm looking for?
You're wringing your hands.
Wringing
your hands. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to wring my hands over swapping out a punter. And it's not
wringing
like
your hands out of worry.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like I was so attached to Trevor Daniel. I've just gotten now to being certain that I'm not supposed to be pronouncing an S at the end of his name.
We need to start doing something on Mondays where we power rank the top five Texans we think could get fired this week.
Ooh.
That could be a new thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say the early leaders in the clubhouse for next week could be Chantrell Henderson,
mm-hmm.
who lost his job to Roderick Johnson.
There are other offensive tackles maybe on the street right now or available for trade that you could bring in.
I feel like one of the running backs, either Buddy Howell or Tywan Jones, one of the running backs that doesn't carry the football at all on the team. Tywan Jones was inactive this past week. Mm-hmm. I feel like he could be on the short list.
Running backs especially. So running backs have become like punters where they're almost interchangeable.
Yeah.
People just look at them around like, I'll just pluck one off a tree at some point and then throw them in here if
I
need to.
Carlos Hyde is not doing anything to dissuade that line of thinking.
Carlos Hyde might be on the hot seat by week 13.
You
Who
never
the hell
know.
Knows? Bill O'Brien's
week
playing.
Four.
He's just playing poker here.
That's it.
Let's shuffle the deck and see what spits out.
That's it, man. That's it. So we're off and running on a Tuesday. John McClain will be in the 8 o'clock hour. And once again, drive safe out there, everybody. It is raining. A lot of you have the day off because of if you work for a school district here in town. So kick back and listen to us here on Sports Radio 610 or the radio.com app. We'll stick with the Texans in the next segment to a degree. They got another schedule gift possibly yesterday as the quarterback crisis in the NFL continues. We'll discuss it next. So the great quarterback crisis in the NFL continues, Seth.
There's a lot of young quarterbacks starting this week.
There are. I saw you actually went and quantified it for me. Thank you for that.
Well, I didn't do the counting. I read a tweet from somebody.
That's okay. It's more than I did because you're saying you're asking me, could there be a gambling angle to this?
Right. At least 18 quarterbacks, including the Steelers' Mason Rudolph, are age 26 or younger and are expected to start this week. That hasn't happened in 32 years since week 3 of the 1987 season. Was that the strike year?
That was the strike year.
Right, so
yeah.
That doesn't even count.
Yeah.
Then they had a bunch of scabs in there.
That's right.
So this is the first non-scab year in however long that you've had this many young quarterbacks starting.
I don't know that there is a rule to go by or a trend to go by with that many young quarterbacks, but I will ask my people out in the desert that question. I will get an answer for us by tomorrow.
Seems like there will be a whole lot more uncertainty about how all these guys are going to behave.
Yeah,
seems like there's uncertainty in the market.
And so what's the play there? You know, that I feel like there could be value on a lot of unders. Yeah. Not a lot of scoring going on because of these young quarterbacks.
Maybe a good week for fantasy defenses.
Could be.
A lot of turnovers.
Yeah.
Either that or everybody plays it close to the vest and they're just running the ball.
Or there's a lot of turnovers that create short fields and then there's some easy touchdowns.
Gambling is confusing.
So is football.
Yeah.
It's a very complex game.
There's too many damn people on the field.
There are.
It really is.
Why can't it be three on three?
I was watching, you know, I started to go through the All-22 yesterday and it just, every single time you do, you realize why football coaches get so overweight. Because you just get absorbed in every single play you could watch for 20 minutes. If you really wanted to grade everybody and not do it the way Pro Football Focus does, which is, I have no idea. They watch television and be like,
spin the wheel. 75.3.
I guess that guy was probably good, even though I couldn't actually see him on the screen. Yeah.
That's funny. So we have yet another quarterback who looks like, maybe missing some time. And the good news for the Texans, hip, hip, hooray, is that this is a quarterback that they are scheduled to play, not this weekend, but the following weekend at home. It looks like Cam Newton may miss time. And this is not really shocking if you watched the Thursday night game last week, where Cam Newton was terrible. He was 24 of 50 in a home loss to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And he was just, there's 24 of 50 where you get, you know, 7 or 8 drops in a game. And if these guys just did their job and caught the football, I would have completed 60% of my passes. Then there's 24 of 50 where you're skipping the ball to receivers, sailing the ball into the second row. That was Cam. Cam was bad in that game.
And then also ineffective as a runner.
Yeah.
So you take away Cam Newton, so much of what makes him magnificent isn't just his running ability. It's the threat of him running. It's the way that they structure the offense around him. And then obviously, he doesn't have a magnificent arm, but he's got an NFL arm. The NFL arm isn't there because of his shoulder surgery. And not just the shoulder surgery, but he tried to redo his mechanics in the offseason. He's got that foot injury that takes away his threat as a runner. He just looked pedestrian as a runner. And he even said it in a way that I don't think most quarterbacks, Cam Newton, wouldn't typically say. He just blamed the injuries after the game. Cam will, if anything, deny that he's ever actually affected by injury or anything. He just flat out said after the game that he wasn't right. So I don't know how long does it take for him to get right in the middle of a season when it was shoulder surgery and this foot issue. I guess they just need to wait until the foot gets right, at least, because then at least he's scarier as a runner and it doesn't affect his throwing emotions.
Yeah, well, he's not scary at all with the outfits that he wears after the game. I'll be honest with you about that.
It's a little,
kerchief wrapped around his head.
That last one, he looked like an aging Hollywood actress who hasn't been in a movie in 25 years.
Who's going
but she still dresses to the nines to go to the grocery store.
Yeah, and wears shades, goes to the farmer's market, tries to avoid people as if people are even recognizing her still.
Yeah,
when deep down she wants to be recognized.
Anytime a man talks to her, she like hits him with her purse because she thinks he's aggressively trying to get her autograph or take pictures or something.
And yet she kind of likes the attention.
In your mind, every man is a photographer with like that old school flash.
Yes.
Like they do a poof off the top. Yeah.
They hold it in one hand and they have the camera in the other.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. But here's the twist in this whole thing, just to bring it back locally here, Seth, is my big takeaway is I'm going to stop analyzing the schedule before the season.
Yeah.
And say, well, the Texans have a really hard schedule and here are all the reasons why. Here are all the reasons why I'm going to stop analyzing the schedule. These are just the games before the bye week. The Texans' bye week is week 10 this year, the week after the Jacksonville game in London. Through the first 9 weeks of the season, they will have played in week 2, Jacksonville without their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
In week 3, they will play the Chargers without their all-pro safety and their Pro Bowl running back.
And that's about to mention the backup to the all-pro safety.
Yes, they're down to their third safety.
Right.
Yeah. Week 4, it looks like they're going to be playing without Cam Newton, recent MVP. Week six, they're going to be playing Kansas City in all likelihood without Tyreek Hill, maybe the most explosive player in football. Except, not that it totally matters. I'm just merely pointing out that
all these things that we've been saying about Pat Mahomes. Like, well, what would he be without Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, and Tyreek Hill? Okay, he's okay without Kareem Hunt. But what would he be without Tyreek? Okay, yeah, but Sammy Watkins is just a late bloomer.
Yeah, and I'm one of those people.
Yeah,
I'm one of those people. And the game this past weekend against the Raiders, you know what my big thing was? Like, he scored all 28 points in one quarter. Look at the other three quarters.
Yeah, come on. What are you even doing in those other three quarters?
He had zeros in the other three quarters.
Give me a quarterback who's consistent.
Right. Yeah, I need seven in each quarter, all right? Yeah. Week seven, Andrew Luck retired. Week eight, Antonio Brown gone from the Raiders. Now, granted, he was traded to your week 13, or he was released and signed by your week 13 opponent, but they were already better than you. And then week nine, you get the Jacksonville Jaguars again without Nick Foles. So that's seven of the first nine games, all with players either out, released, traded, retired, whatever, that have significant value to their team.
Do we know that Foles is going to miss the second game?
Week 11 is what they're targeting.
Week 11, okay, so he's definitely out.
Because their bye week is also week 10. I think they're targeting post the bye week.
I'm watching this game the other day, and I know that Minshew's numbers weren't spectacular, but in crunch time when it mattered in that fourth quarter, the field goal drive and the touchdown drive, he did some good things.
He did some things.
Touch throws on the sideline. It's not like Jonathan Joseph is going to be younger the next time the Texans face the Jaguars.
No, that's true.
And it's going to be in London.
Yeah. So jet lag and all that good stuff. Here's how I, just total layperson judging of quarterbacks in situations like that. How nervous do I get when the guy's dropping back the pass? Minshew was making me nervous at the end of that game because he does just enough things to where you go, okay, this play has a chance to succeed. And he did, and on the touchdown, he did a great job rolling out, buying time. Chark comes across the back of the end zone, and he just found him right back there in the back of the end zone.
It was interesting. The guy on Twitter, Smart Football, I don't know what his actual name is, but he's pretty smart. Usually if somebody calls themselves Smart Football, you want to be like, look at this jerk. But he's actually pretty smart.
Yeah.
But he was talking
a little
about
braggadocious, but yes.
Yeah, air raid quarterbacks and how it's different than a lot of other spread quarterbacks. The tendency with a guy like Hunter Minshew is to say, well, he runs a spread system. He doesn't know what he's doing. They do go through a progression. They do some more diverse things and make it, they put a lot more play. Oh, the one of the big differences with an air raid system is that the quarterbacks are actually calling the plays on the field. So they're looking to the sideline, but they're not taking all the direction in every single play and check from the coaches. They can actually make checks at the line of scrimmage on their own. They're not calling the plays, but they're making the checks at the line of scrimmage.
So in plain English, they're more ready when they're coming into the league?
You could make that argument. Yeah. Now they still have, there's other weaknesses because they haven't been under center and everything, but I think Minshew is a more polished quarterback than a lot of people would have assumed.
He doesn't look like he gets rattled. That's it. A lot of these young, the Texans have played enough young quarterbacks that Romeo Crennel has been able to fluster. Look, he did it to Baker Mayfield last year. Baker Mayfield was terrible against the Texans, and that was a game that was played, I think, in November. So it's not like Baker was in his first or second start like Minshew was on Sunday, and Minshew did a really good job.
But they only scored
12 points. I get that. But Minshew was never looked really flustered in that game.
I would say the thing with Mayfield, though, was I thought he was awful in the first half. The second half, I thought he kind of beat the pants off the Texans. The Texans were lucky to get out of that game with a couple of strokes that...
The one big play that makes that made the game look like more of a blowout than it may have been was the deep ball to Antonio Callaway that Justin Reed came over and forced the fumble inside the 5-yard line.
Yeah.
Like, if Callaway walks in with that touchdown, then it's a completely different ball game. So, yeah. I'm with you on Minshew. So the Texans will get him in week nine. There is one other bit of quarterback news that came down towards the end of our show yesterday that is significant. I don't know why this didn't happen like 4 years ago. We'll get to that. And also, Seth, you did your film study on the offense for the Jags game. Couple names that I'm looking at your notes that stood out offensively that I think might surprise some people. We'll get into that in the next segment as well. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. I feel like in Houston, they should just tell us when we're not under a flash flood warning. That would be easier. I'm just going to assume we're under a flash flood warning all the time.
All the time.
Yeah, and then they can be like, hey, today, no flash flood warning. I'll be like, okay, good. I can leave my house comfortably.
Driving past one of those massive retention ponds in Pearland this morning.
Yeah.
It's a lake all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But it's nice. It's usually a nice green field. I always think, oh, I could set up a tent out there and go camping.
We have a gigantic one in the middle of our subdivision. I thought about buying a jet ski just for when it rains. Zipping around in the middle of the neighborhood and the muddy, nasty retention pond.
Pearland has an impressive system of retention ponds.
We're lucky. It's the anti-Friendswood.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of our water drifts down to Friendswood. That's what happens.
Sorry, Friendswood.
Sorry about that. We didn't set it up that way.
I don't want to speak out of turn here. There was an issue with one of these towns' floodgates or the something.
Are you afraid of offending a...
I'm afraid of getting sued if I say the wrong town or something.
Yeah, don't do that.
But there was a sewage issue. Like one of these towns that has a really, really good system, but it failed and all that sewage went dumping down towards Clear Lake Airway. Yeah.
All the things to fail.
Yeah. That was a while back. That's not like this morning or anything.
Speaking of sewage, Eli Manning was benched yesterday. It was announced yesterday that Daniel Jones is going to be the starter for the New York Giants, to which I say, bravo, Giants. You're only like 4 years late to the prom. Eli should have been benched a long time. He should have been taken out to pasture a long, long time
ago. It's been three seasons that his arm has just been really,
it's
really
been terrible.
Suspect, right. That was why it was so. I feel like the Texans are single-handedly responsible for at least giving him as many more starts as he's had because of what Eli did last year versus the Texans.
He was good in week three.
He was carving it up to wide open receivers underneath. He was doing, if you let his brain go to work, he's a good, smart veteran quarterback. If you play a bunch of zone against him and give him wide open receivers, he's going to take advantage of you. It's that if you rely on his arm at all, it's been for a few years now. He's not going to do it with his arm.
Right.
And it's been obvious to everybody outside of the Giants organization. The only curious thing last year was that when they benched him for Geno Smith. That was the weird thing. It's one thing to bench him for somebody that's a viable potential starter. That was just the strange thing.
They're still digging out from underneath the PR rubble of benching him under McAdoo 2 years ago. That may be what you're referring to.
2 years ago is what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, because it ended his consecutive game streak. Yeah. And, man, I've never seen a star play.
They gave him a makeup just to make up for benching him.
A whole season.
They gave him a whole season. This is like the Kobe Bryant contract at the end.
Yeah.
Where they gave Kobe this huge contract for no reason at all other than, hey, thanks for everything.
100%. And here's my frustration with this whole thing. And I know Eli was a two-time Super Bowl MVP. I get it. Kobe was at least a good basketball player. Like, Kobe was a perennial all-star who you can, with a straight face, say he's one of the top 10, 15 at most, players in the history of the game. I don't even know if Eli is one of the top 15 quarterbacks of this decade.
This is what I don't get. Okay. Because people bring this up like it means something. I want this person that texted this in, I want you to send a follow-up text and explain what this says about anything or proves. It says, as Eli holds up two rings he took from Brady. Yeah, that was awesome. It was really, really cool.
Right.
That was a long time ago.
2011 was the second
That
one.
Was 8 years ago.
Eight years.
Is Eli Manning supposed to have a starting job ad infinitum? Like, as long as he possibly wants it?
We sure was looking
that way.
Because
he won a Super Bowl in 2011? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. And yet, somehow, that was enough to sustain Eli long past other, longer than it sustained Joe Montana. How long after Joe Montana's last Super Bowl did he end up in Kansas, or did he end up in Kansas City?
Three or four years. I'll look it up, but 89 was when they beat the drums off of the Broncos, 55-10. That was 1989. He was with the Chiefs by, I want to say, like 92 or 93.
Now it helps when they have Steve Young to replace him.
Yeah, but still, this is a guy who won four Super Bowls.
They were making moves to move on to Steve Young well in advance.
Which is what
of
the Giants are doing
happen.
Now with Daniel
right.
Jones.
Now, but they should have been doing it 2 years
100%.
ago. 100%. They were drafting running backs instead of quarterbacks because they felt like Eli was going to. That was the strangest thing. As awesome as Saquon Barkley is, why are you drafting running backs? Why are you continuing to ignore the quarterback position as if your current quarterback last year was actually going to do something over the next couple of years. They were in extreme denial about where Eli was as a quarterback.
So 89 and 90 were, those are Montana's last 2 years. He was first team all pro both those years. And then did he get hurt? Because 91, he didn't play at all. He's like, he doesn't even have a, and then in 92, he played in one game.
Yeah.
So, and then they traded him to Kansas City.
That was one of the big things, was him coming back from the injury.
Yeah.
And him feeling like he was further along than Bill Walsh thought he was.
35 years old at that point. So, Eli's in his late 30s now. So anyway, before we get to your film study on the Jags game, where do you come out on the Eli Hall of Fame argument?
I don't think he is. Yeah, I think those two Super Bowls were awesome, but people, if
you and I get along just fine.
And he had some great plays in there too, but then fine, give everybody on those two teams Super Bowl Hall of Fame status too, because there's nothing else about him other than, like, he's a compiler. He compiled a bunch of passing yards.
Super durable.
He's eighth on the all-time passing list. He's got a 500 win-loss record. He's got a horrible touchdown to interception ratio for the modern NFL. And he just had a couple of great playoff runs. And you can't take that away from him. That was awesome. This is what I would say. If Joe Flacco can somehow stumble his way into another Super Bowl, Joe Flacco's got a much better case for the Super Bowl, for the Hall of Fame than Eli Manning. If you just look at his numbers,
he's won a lot more football games.
He's won more. He's got a better touchdown to interception ratio. He's won more football games. Like, he's done a lot. He's probably got about the same touchdown to interception ratio. And
I don't know, man. Eli's led the league a couple of times.
But what did Joe Flacco do in that one Super Bowl run?
He was incredible.
He took a team.
He was better
than
Eli.
Wasn't a dominant team, but he had an incredible run through the playoffs. Which is what Eli's done a couple times.
I mean, Joe Flacco had an historic run. Like, he went 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. He had a Montana-like run through the playoffs that year. He won a game on the road against the one seed in Denver that year.
I would say, too, that I keep seeing this argument. Well, look at some of the other quarterbacks that are there, like Joe Namath or Terry Bradshaw, I guess, would probably be the name that comes up a lot. Terry Bradshaw had a much bigger tradition of winning than Eli did.
He won four Super Bowls in 6 years.
Yeah.
For one of the all-time great dynasties.
Somehow people stack up two Super Bowls as the equivalent of four Super Bowls, which, I don't want to get deep into the mathematics here. There's a 100% difference between those two.
Literally.
And then also just the absolute dominance throughout that whole stretch that the Steelers had.
Yeah. Here's my argument against Eli Manning when people bring up the Hall of Fame. I just don't think he's a very good quarterback. Like, my first criteria for somebody going into the Hall of Fame is that they're good at their job. Eli Manning's not a very good quarterback. He is an average at best quarterback who had two historic playoff runs. I'm not going to give somebody the ultimate individual accolade because they had two good weeks at work.
Yeah.
You know, like he had 15 very, very average to below average years. And two good weeks. Sorry, I know they were two really important weeks, but that's not enough. That doesn't fit the Hall of Fame for me.
Somebody says if Kurt Warner is a Hall of Famer, then Eli is. I never once thought Eli could hold Kurt Warner's jock for a moment.
No.
When would it be? Because Eli wasn't a late bloomer like Kurt Warner. Was it because Eli had an older brother that brought him a lot of notoriety very early on, and then
Kurt
Eli
Warner,
was a first-round pick.
Kurt Warner multiple seasons was in the conversation for the MVP of the – and won an MVP.
Yeah.
For the MVP of the league. Eli Manning struggled to make Pro Bowls at a position where if you have a pulse and you just wait it out and let everybody bow out of the Pro Bowl, you'll go to the Pro Bowl.
I would say that if Eli were any other position other than quarterback, this wouldn't even be a discussion, right?
Correct.
Right? If you weren't considered one of the best at your position – for multiple years, then nobody talks about for the MVP. It's if a wide receiver wasn't one of the best players but ends up having a couple of great Super Bowls and gets Super Bowl MVP twice, then you don't talk about him in the Hall of Fame. So this is a Manning thing, and frankly, I find it un-American. What you're doing is allowing the aristocracy to rule because he's in the royal family of the NFL. And because he has more glittery jewelry than us lay people.
Spits in the face of equality.
It does, really. Yeah. If anything, what you are for is you're for the queen more than you are for the NFL.
Yeah, the aristocrats.
Yeah.
So you did, shifting gears here on Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, you did a little film study yesterday.
Is Titus Howard a Hall of Famer?
It was a rainy day outside. They're 1-0 with him starting. starting at left guard.
I think what you're asking is Titus Howard more, is he more of a candidate for the Hall of Fame than Eli Manning?
You just stole my 9 a.m. tease.
Yeah, my answer would be yes. Very clearly, yes, 100%, totally. Titus Howard deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
So what did you see, Seth Payne? What did you see?
I think for this, okay, for one, from this moment forward, you got to always just stop looking at these Pro Football Focus grades for offensive linemen. They grade them based on the TV copy 2 hours after the game. It's amazing because I read this write up after the game about Titus Howard, and it says, "Wow, he really struggled. He got a 40. A 40 out of 100 is the grade."
Wow, that's
and
a terrible
talking about
score.
How awful he was, and I thought, man, I didn't think so from watching it at first glance. So I watched the TV copy and I still didn't think so. I thought Titus Howard had a pretty damn good game other than for a few, he had a few big flubs, like rookie type mistakes.
Sure.
He is playing with a broken hand, by the way, or broken finger. So after watching the coach's film yesterday, Titus Howard had a very good first half. He had a second half that was marred by a couple of really unfortunate mistakes. One bad play, a couple of unfortunate mistakes.
The tripping penalty is what people will remember the most.
But in terms of if you're just going to grade him out and not worry about when the tripping penalty happened and that how that killed the drive, I actually thought he did pretty well. I think there's a lot to be excited about with him, especially because he's a rookie playing with a broken finger. He's got that shocker cast on his hand, and that's really hard. That's really hard as an offensive lineman. So I was pleased with Titus Howard.
Is he the right tackle for this team by the end of the year, or is the shift from left guard to right tackle too much to throw on a rookie's plate in season?
I don't know exactly. And now I need to go back and watch Roderick Johnson more. Roderick had a couple tough snaps, but for the most part, I didn't dial in on him. For the most part, I was okay with him there. I guess the question becomes then, okay, you're going to move him to right tackle, and then so at left guard, you're going to...
Yes, but Calamete back in?
Or you're moving Fulton...
Left
and Sharping right, or vice versa. Yeah. I don't have an urge to see... I don't have to see anybody out there as long as Roderick Johnson's playing hard right at right tackle.
Yeah,
I don't have to see Sharping out there anytime soon.
It probably depends more on Roderick Johnson than anything else.
Left guard is a very important position. Like, every single position on the field is a very important position. Nick Martin's got to stop messing up the snap count. That was another thing that bothered me, was that Titus Howard was marked down for that penalty that they called. They could have called the penalty on either Laremy Tunsil or for the false start, Titus Howard, because they both left simultaneously, which leads me to believe we've still got more timing issues with the snap with Nick Martin. Nick Martin, because then in the same half, he also snapped the ball when nobody else was expecting him to snap the ball. Nick Martin's got to get that straightened out. You're the second highest paid center in the league. Get that straightened out. It's a damn snap.
Seth, I don't know if you know this, but the second that pen hit the paper on an $11 million year extension, it ceased being his fault.
He said FOH.
That's right.
Bill O'Brien's yelling at him about the snap count in practice.
He's like
he's just
flossing his teeth with a $100 bill. What'd you say, coach? Lighting a cigar during a drill?
Otherwise, Nick Martin does have a lot on his plate in terms of calling out protections and everything. And you can see he was really active in this game doing all of that. I will say, as far as the offensive line goes, I was very, very, very pleased with how they handled all the things that I've criticized them for in the past. And Wade Smith pointed this out yesterday also. When the defensive line shifted right before the snap, the Texans' offensive line handled it extremely well. In the run game, they were physical. They were bullying at times. They moved with coordination amongst each other. It was a really, really good effort.
You mean like real NFL teams?
Yeah, like real NFL teams, right. But they did a good job. Yeah. There was another thing. Titus Howard had a snap in the second half where he looked like he took a wrong snap and he tripped Nick Martin up. So a few little rookie deals there that are going to happen. But overall, I was very pleased with how he played as a rookie.
I'm looking at your notes, and I'm seeing the name Cullen Gillespie.
I'm
not seeing Gillespie. I'm seeing Gilly.
That's right. I'm going to call him
Gilly.
I'm calling him Gilly.
Samwell.
Not Gilly from Game of Thrones.
Gilly! Maybe the most annoying character of all time.
She grew on me by the end.
She did?
Yeah. Unlike that Gilly, this Gilly needs no time to get used to.
Everybody
loves Gilly.
So you liked Gillespie? Did some good things.
He had a couple. Look, he might have had more successful blocks downfield than Jay Prosh had an entire season. Jay Prosh looked so good in his pads. He looked so good in his pads, and yet he would routinely just whiff on people and fall off of
them. He had that shaved head, too, when this with his helmet was off, so he looked like a fullback.
Gillespie and he had tattoos and biceps.
Gillespie
and
has a beautiful set of flowing locks.
Looks like a Viking.
Belies the position.
He was like glue on linebackers. He had a couple good plays where he got out, and once on a linebacker, I think once on a safety or a backer, I can't remember. And there was another moment early in the game when Deshaun scrambled to the left. He really could have had Gillespie wide open over the middle. There's another time later in the game, too, where Gillespie was open as a potential dump-off. And that's something that's one little area that Deshaun, it's curious. He's advanced in a lot of ways in terms of the mental side of the game. He's almost got an aversion to dumping it off to a running back or a fullback. It, for some reason, when he's got somebody wide open over the middle, that's the one time where it almost feels like it's too easy money for him because he's so good with pressure in his face. He's ridiculously good with pressure in his face, but sometimes, obviously, as we know, he just tempts fate a little too long.
So Gillespie only played 3 snaps on offense, but you noticed
he had two blocks on 3 snaps.
Yeah.
When they brought him in, they were going to use him. It's funny. I was actually, I can't remember if I said this on air or not. I don't want to say who I met. I met somebody that knows Gillespie before the game last week.
You mentioned that. It was a certain relative.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. I was telling that relative.
Spawned him.
I was telling that relative that, hey, just from watching during training camp, man, they really want to use the fullback in this offense. It's just a matter of getting Gillespie on board. He played 1 year of it in college. And obviously, A&M's version of fullback is way different than an NFL version of fullback. He looked so much better blocking in this game than he did in week 2 of training camp.
That's encouraging.
That's very encouraging. He's come a long way from when they were first trying to integrate him. And as a receiver, we've seen this in the preseason. This is what you need in the modern NFL. It's awesome to have a fullback, but that fullback has to be a receiving threat. Gillespie is a receiving threat. So he's going to be involved more and more. I think whatever O'Brien saw of him on film offensively, he's got to be pleased with it. So I was very excited to see that.
That's good stuff right there.
So that adds a whole new element to what you can do offensively.
No doubt. All right. Apparently the Texans have a kangaroo court system.
Okay. Picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.